Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv Escana PC. Today is March 14th, 2013. This is a community conference call which is being recorded. Be careful. Your voice will be recorded and made publicly available if you ask any questions. You may want to conceal your identity when you ask questions. You can make up a name, Sam, Sham, Ram, Sham, whatever you like. Remember that this call is only for information purposes. This does not create an attorney-client relationship. So we are not your lawyers and you are not our clients just because you participated in this call. As usual, I will begin first with the questions that have been posted, and if time permits, we'll do new questions. The questions that have been posted can have follow-ups. So once I've done answering all the posted questions, I'll get into follow-up questions from the people who have posted. That said, let me jump right in. Excuse me. Sai, 1984, the first question. He wants to know, okay, I've obtained an H-1B. It has been approved. I'm sitting in India. My employer doesn't want me to come till, let's say, December 2013. But I'm getting another offer. Am I subject to the quota or not? Well, the answer is you're not subject to the quota. Your H-1 has been approved, even though it hasn't been joined. You have not joined the job. You're still not subject to the quota. So you could join another employer without having any pay stubs and without ever joining the employer who first sponsored you. Can you use the same visa stamp? That is a very difficult question to answer. We have asked the consulates, and they have clearly said, we want you to get a new visa stamp. If you change employers and you have not yet entered USA, we want you to get a new visa stamp, okay? If I look at the law, it really does not require me to get a new visa stamp. To be safe, the best thing to do is get a new visa stamp. This is what I remember of your question. Let me just go over your listed questions, the four of them. One, question number one has been answered. Question number two has been answered. Will there be any problem at the port of entry? I'm recommending you get a new visa stamp. So three has been answered. You have two questions marked three. Both of them been answered. Are pay stubs mandatory for H-1B transfer? In this kind of case where you're outside USA, there can be no pay stubs. So no, they are not mandatory. Okay? Next question is Sunil R. Kimi. H-4 application passport validity date follow-up. 2 weeks ago, he had posted a question about an error in his spouse's form. His wife's passport expiry date had been incorrectly stated, and I recommended that they should get that corrected, but the lawyer is saying, I'm not going to do it. I wonder why, but in any case. So their concern is this a misrepresentation? Is this something I can correct? First of all, I think even though the H-4 has been approved, and I expected it to be approved, it should be somewhere put in the record that there is a problem with the passport expiration date. I don't think it in any case can rise to the level of fraud, but it's something that you should correct. I have seen some of the silliest things come back and haunt people. I don't think this is going to be one of them, but something needs to be done. At the very least, what you should do is contact the U.S. Customer Service, USCIS, USCIS Customer Service. Call them up, say this is a problem, what do you want me to do? Case has been approved, but there was a small error in the paperwork. Do you want us to refile or is it okay? What you should then do is take a piece of paper, write down, right when you're done talking to these guys, write down the phone number you called, write down the time and the date of the call, and if you can get the name of the person, great. If not, some identifying number, etc., that's fine. If not, that's okay too. And write down the sum and substance of what you were told. So on, you know, March 14th at 12:35 p.m., I called 1-800-da-da-da-da, and I was told that there's no correction needed. Keep that paper saved up somewhere. Okay? Another option you have is to write a letter to USCIS, same address that approved the case, asking the same question. That letter will never be responded to, but at least you put something in the record. Okay? The letter can say, you know, we have this problem. Do you want us to, how do we amend this? Something like that. Sounds kind of silly, but the smallest things, you see, we always think people who are, in my view, any lawyer who has not seen the court system doesn't really completely prepare a case. Very few lawyers can. So when we look at a case, since we are also litigators, we are thinking not only about what the USCIS can do, but what can happen in court. So in court, there was a case about 11 years ago where I won a case just because our client, at our advice, had sent in a letter like this. It was a slightly different context. It was an extension of an I-539, and there were some issues. He was a physician. His wife was also a physician, and USCIS was trying to deport them, but we were able to win in the federal court based only upon one letter that had been written. The judge said, why didn't you respond to the letter? And USCIS tried to explain that we are a big organization and these letters go in trash, and he said, well, that's not the individual's problem. As far as they are concerned, they are contacting you. So you can do all these things. Let me get into the next one. Although, you know, Sunil, one of the things that I'm thinking is that why should the lawyer not correct it? I mean, it's not that difficult to do. I'm not sure what is going on. You can pay them for their time, of course. Next question is from Ray. Arrived in USA on a student visa, which was valid for 4 years, but the passport was marked duration of studies. Correction, Ray, you probably mean the I-94. Arrival departure record was marked DS. It's not duration of studies, it's called duration of status. DS means duration of status. And by the way, you are wrong. Even though you went out of status and remained in USA till 2003, which is about 17 years, you are still not subject to the 310 bar because you had a I-94 that said DS. Just judging by what you've posted, you were actually never subject to the 310 bar. If you have a copy of that DS or the original I-94, which I think you do have, you should be fine. You can come back whenever you like. You could have come back even earlier. You just cannot come back on a student visa or a business visa. That's unlikely. But you can come back on an H-1, L-1. Visas that don't have a problem of having stayed without authorization. Okay? Of course, when you fill out the right form, they will ask you a question. Have you lived in USA without status? The answer is yes. Have you lived in USA unlawfully? The answer is no. Okay? The rest of your questions are actually kind of irrelevant because they don't really matter. You are not subject to the 310 bar anyway because you have that I-94. Next question is Sumed. Sumed had a situation. It's a Sumed the Hag. Sumed Hag, I guess. He was in USA on F-1. His OPT expired and he stayed a little bit over 3 weeks or so over his grace period after the OPT. That should not be a big deal if you have a good explanation for it. And I cannot help you fill out the form which you have asked me, but I can tell you this. When somebody has overstayed their OPT grace period, their I-94, if it is still valid, if your I-94 expired, then, of course, you are unlawfully present as well. But you're definitely out of status, okay? And you can it can be said that you've also violated the terms of your U.S. visa. So all of these things are correct. Okay, I can't help you fill the form, but you have overstayed, you have been unlawfully present, probably, and you have otherwise violated the terms of your visa, okay? Should that be a problem for B1, B2? It can be. It all depends. I think they can stop you unless you have a very good explanation. But it should not be a problem for L1 or H1 or L2 or H4 type visa. D'Souza wants to know, H1B extension approval start date after I-94 expiry. I really like the way you posted this question. Thank you. That makes my life a lot easier. If you look at his last three lines, they pretty much sum up his entire case. Okay? Makes my life a lot simpler. Thank you, and please, guys, try to follow this format if you can. He had an I-94 from a previous H-1B petition, which was valid till July 6, 2012. H-1B extension was applied before the expiration, which is in May. H-1B extension was approved effective October 15th. So there's a gap from July 6th to October 15th. He's concerned, is there a problem? No problem at all. Okay? And the information that has been given to your attorney, they actually didn't have to contact USCIS, is quite obvious. Anybody who's practicing immigration law knows this is what USCIS does. They do not approve cases retroactively. So if they approve a case that was timely filed in the first place and they approve it 3 months later, they'll approve it with that gap of 3 months in there because they can't approve it retroactively, or at least they won't, okay? So this is not a problem. I don't see any issue here, rest assured. Shazbel wants to know, they are on H-4 visa. They appeared for an interview with a low-profit organization. They are not cap-exempt. I've never heard a term of art as a low-profit organization. The only organizations that are, in this context, H-1 quota exempt are those who are nonprofit and conduct research or are affiliated with a university. Okay? So not only should they be nonprofit, not all nonprofits are exempt. Low-profit, so we'll not even talk about that. That, of course, should not be exempt. But nonprofit has also to be either a research or affiliated with a university, higher institution of higher learning. I shouldn't say university. Actually, the words used are institution of higher learning. Okay. Sometimes even community college can be that. It depends. If they offer degree, I think beyond 12th standard, even associates, it might qualify. I haven't. Don't quote me on that. Have that research, but that could be something that you need to look at. However, this is not a quota-exempt organization. And by the way, there is no need to prove that they've taken steps to recruit U.S. workers for an H-1B process unless the company is H-1B dependent, which means more than 15-20% of their staff is H-1 holding people. There's a formula for that. I think it's more than 15%. But in such a case, only they have to show recruitment. Otherwise, no recruitment is necessary. Rahul Gopal Joshi. Rahul says, working with employer A applied for extension before date of expiration. Extension approved. No gap. I think Rahul has the same issue. Same issue as what I discussed just a second ago, that there's a gap between H-1s. Timely filed, but the approval and the date his last I-94 expired has some gap. That shouldn't be a problem. I don't see any issue. Why should you have pay stubs from the old employer when you already joined the new employer? I don't see any problem here. H-1B transfer was approved in October 2012. Approval start date is second week of October. I already started working for employer B in June 2012. That's perfectly legal employment because your transfer was filed, let's see, it was accepted second week of June. So as long as the transfer was filed before you joined the new employer, employer B, I don't see any problem. You have asked me then a question. I'm visiting Arizona. What should I keep? Well, first of all, I cannot comment about Arizona law because I'm not admitted to practice law in Arizona. But under general immigration law, what you should carry is supposed to be your passport and your I-94. Can you carry copies? I don't see the need to carry copies. I think you can keep copies because if the I-94 gets lost, you can always apply for a replacement. So it's not the end of the world. Okay, so carry the original passport and the I-94. That should complete it. Okay. Next question is from MK, Counselor Processing for H-1B. My OPT expired March 1st. Okay. So before April 1st, their OPT is expiring. So you cannot work after March 1st, but then you have a 60-day grace period. In that 60-day grace period, your H-1 is being filed. Can I stay? Yes, you can. Can you work? You cannot. Okay. You should not, well, the question is, will you be able to get I-94 within USA? It depends. I remember, if I could be wrong about this, but in the past, USCIS, at least for 1 year, did that. They gave I-94 to people in your situation. Are they going to do it this time? I haven't heard anything official yet. Worth trying. So when you apply for your H-1, at least try to get H-1 here. Make a representation to the government that you're not working and you're stuck in this gap. So if they could please allow you to get I-94 within USA, that would be great. No harm in asking for it. Okay. Raj has a very lengthy question. Raj, it is a very long question, and I did review it this morning, and I kind of remember what you said. So what happened was he started working for a company back in 2008, and based upon AC-21, he joined this employer. Current employer's perm under EB-2 was also approved. So in July 2012, he got a EB-2 approval through the current employer. And the salary there is $100,000. Wage offer to 99 as an okay. So we don't really know what this, there could be a range. It looks like there's a range on the wage offer. The lowest is $100,001. So I-140 got approved. I-485 got approved. Now the question is, he has a bunch of questions. He says, how best can I approach the employer to remind them of the fact that I'm still getting paid less than the prevailing wage? Guys, let me make a couple of things clear here. When an employer files for a green card, they are not guaranteeing anything. They are merely stating a good faith intention to do something. Okay. Right now, your salary is $98,000, which is a couple of thousand dollars less than what they have put on the prevailing wage. Okay. Now, since it is not a contractual obligation, if you don't have a right to insist on it, there was a Colorado case about 8 years ago in which the employee was able to win something like this. But most cases from federal courts where this issue has come up, can an employee insist on the labor certification or the perm being the basis for a contract? The answer has been no. Courts have uniformly said no. That's not, you can't sue the employer on that. So really, you can talk to a state lawyer, that's not really my field, whether you have a cause of action. But if the employer decides to let you go, there isn't anything you can do about it. Under immigration law, that's perfectly legal. The employer tried, they tried to get you the higher job. If they cannot give it to you, well, too bad. Will you lose your green card? You shouldn't, because you tried to get the higher job. So you have no contractual rights, usually. But again, state law may be different in your case. Two, the employer can let you go without any consequence under U.S. immigration laws. Okay. Would it become a problem for your citizenship, naturalization, etc.? You know, as long as, I think you should write at least an email saying this was the job title, this was the job description, and this is a salary. Please, may I be given that so that I don't have a problem for my naturalization? I think something like that is a perfectly genuine case. Okay? And I do not think you need to complain to anybody. Once you've written that email, I think you have protected yourself. But if you want to take it further, complain to DOL, complain to USCIS, sure, go ahead and do that. Okay? But I don't think it's ever going to go anywhere. That's the way I look at it. Now, I can't get into all your questions. You have too many of them. But that's an overview of your picture. I don't think you have a legal right to sue the employer or insist that they pay you the higher salary. but I think you should at least write them an email. And if you want to follow it up with the government agency's complaint, that makes your case a little stronger. Graves wants to know, H1 sixth year to F1 when perm has been filed. So the headline is quite straightforward. So the question is, can F1 be rejected if the perm has been filed? No. Because the question on the form I-539 is, has anybody filed an immigrant visa, something like that, petition for you? And that's form I-140. So perm is not an immigrant visa. If F1 gets rejected, can I continue on my H1? Yes, you can, as long as you've not quit your job and joined school full-time. If you are working full-time, or whatever the terms of your H1 are, and also going to school full-time simultaneously, that's okay, because on H1 you can do that. And if the F1 gets rejected, you still have your H1. R. Kata says, employer A filed seventh year extension based upon approved I-140. I-94 H1B expired September 2012. On December 20th, which is after the I-94 expired, there was some kind of a notice. In Feb 2013, employer B filed H-1B as well. There was an RFE on employer B's case asking for non-immigrant status, valid non-immigrant status. You provided response to RFP, providing pay stubs, etc. Now, the employer A has gotten an intent to deny, because there is some derogatory information about employer-employee relationship. Oh, there's some derogatory information and employer-employee relationship. Okay. So there are two reasons. The questions are, so you understand the fact pattern, I hope, everybody. The fact pattern is, working for employer A, applied for H1, everything expires, but the extension is still pending. Move over to employer B. Employer B gets a request for evidence saying, prove status. They respond. In the meantime, while this is going on, employer A gets a notice of intent to deny. Now, the questions are this. New H-1B is approved with extension of stay I-94. What is the best option to hold? Oh, I'm sorry. On March 6, 2013, I missed that point. You already have an approval through employer B, which is unusual. That's very, very unusual. This case should not have been approved with extension of stay, but they've done it good for you. Okay. The reason it should not be an approved, because when they filed your H-1 on Feb 1st, 2013, you had already an expired H-1 and only an extension pending. Extension pending is not status. It is merely authorized period of stay. So technically, USCIS could and should have denied your I-94, but they didn't do that. Great. So the questions are, new H-1B is approved with extension of stay. What is the best option to old H-1 NOID, withdraw or respond? Well, I never like to walk away from an RFE, because that makes it a red flag for the employer. No problem for you. It's a red flag for the employer. It's their choice they want to respond or not. Does it impact your green card process? Well, let's look at it. The worst-case scenario, you were never out of status. Even now, your old extension application is pending. So, no, there should be no problem with the green card at all. What is the proof of my status from September 30th to March 6th? There's no proof of status. You are in authorized period of stay, because employer A had filed your extension before your current H-1 expired. And I don't think withdrawal of your old H-1B should impact your status. The problem is they should never have approved your case with I-94, but they've done it. I don't think they should take it back, but who knows. If you get a denial, does it affect your future stampings? I don't think it should. Now, here are some questions on LCA H-1B amendment. All right, guys, let me give you the general law one more time. Almost always, you will need to do an H-1B amendment. Almost always, if there is a change in H-1. The only exception when you do not have to do an H-1B amendment, if your employer and your client remains the same, your job descriptions remains the same, everything remains the same, you're only moving within 30, 40 miles of an approved location, then you may not need. But if you change clients within the same location, or you move outside normal commuting distance, go from east to Midwest like you are, you have to file an H-1B amendment, okay? Next question, Chazbel. The question is it legal to volunteer on H-4? Be careful. Let me show you. Go to the forums. forums.immigration.com. Go to the advanced search, okay? And when you see the advanced search, click on blog entries. That's where you want to look. And look for the keyword volunteer. I have an entry that describes this in great detail. Read up on that. Search entire posts, search now. And right here, you see this entry that pulled up. Can H-4, H-2 visa holders perform voluntary work? It describes in great detail, gives you the regulations, tells you what you can and cannot do. The bottom line is you cannot work for any benefit. As long as you're not taking any benefit, you can work. Okay? So go ahead and review that. I think this should be okay. Jimmy Gaither. I-130 denied failure to appear for appointment, yet we never got information. Okay. Now the question is, we can't file a motion to reopen because we can't afford the money. Well, I think you should contact your congressman's office and see what they can do for you. So how do you contact your congressman's office? Well, let me show you. Go to immigration.com, okay, and search in the search box up there. Look for Member of Congress. Member of Congress. Do that search, okay? When you do that search, the third entry from the top is contacting members of Congress and USCIS Ombudsman for Immigration Cases. This is a video, and there's a transcript underneath it. It contains in detail the links and everything that you need to do to contact your congressman's office. So member of Congress, just do a search on immigration.com. That's the best I can tell you. Ask the congressman what they can do for you. They might be able to get it reopened without a formal MTR. SG wants to know, I am on H-1B with 7.5 years in U.S. I-140 is approved. My current H-1B extension was based upon approved I-140. I work on client location as third party, basically EVC model, employer, vendor, client. Applied for Australian permanent residency because wife can't work here. So if at this point, these are the questions, I start working in Australia, what happens to my H-1B? Well, the interesting thing is H-1B only kicks in while you are in USA. Let me explain. So let's say I've got H-1B approval and I worked in USA 3 months. Then I was gone for 9 months. Am I still on H-1? No. I'm not required to be on H-1, but if I come back again and resume the same job, I'm back on H-1. In other words, H-1 remains active and the requirements of the H-1 remain active only while you're in USA. They do not disappear just because you left USA for an extended period of time, as long as the H-1 job is still available when you come back. It's the same problem for green card. the green card job must be available, and the ability to pay wages must be available, because government can raise that issue. If you have a job here, why are you working in Australia? Okay. So as long as the job is secure and can be demonstrated to exist, you should be okay. Would there be a problem for your employer if you are outside USA? No, just give it to them in writing. They shouldn't have to revoke the H-1B, because if you want to come back and take over that H-1B again, that should be okay. Can I come back on to your existing H-1B? Yes, you can, as long as the job is still there. If I don't have pay stubs, is that going to be a problem? As long as the employer has the ability to pay wages and you have a good explanation for why you are outside USA and how the job continues to exist in USA while you're outside, you should be okay. Personally, I would be very cautious with this, because I think there's a real problem. The government can take the position that, you know, how can there be a permanent job or even a temporary job if you are actually not working here? Next question is from a TVU, Tri-Valley University ex-student, who says, we had a phone consultation in July 2012 regarding my case, and I had asked him to go ahead and come to the community conference call rather than paying a consultation for things that are relatively simple and don't require a lot of time. So his wife has had a green card for over 11 years, but she's not stayed here for more than 2 weeks within every 365 days. Her green card is also in jeopardy. I want you to know that, and I'm sure I must have told you that. Her green card can be taken away anytime. Okay. I currently have a Hong Kong passport, been visiting USA regularly. I was told US Immigration not to do so. And then you applied for Tri-Valley University and you were enrolled for 2 semesters. Then it got shut down. Your wife applied for I-130 in October 2011, as I suggested. So, okay, good. Now the questions are, according to the letter we received, our I-130 will reach the current date in about Jan 2014. We are planning that my wife can stay in the U.S. from June 2013 till Jan 2014. Listen, the problem here is, in order for somebody, and I have a video on this also, look in my blog. I have a video on how do you maintain your green card. If you don't have your permanent home in USA, they can take away your green card. So your wife is not safe. Does she have to work? Can she study? As long as she can, you know, as long as you can meet the support issue, it's called the public charge issue. In other words, whether or not you'll become a problem for the U.S. government, they have to support you. So as long as she has enough money and you have enough money and there is a co-sponsor for an affidavit of support, you should be okay. She doesn't have to work. But you need some way of demonstrating that you folks have enough money. Read the instructions on Form I-864. And actually, you may need a lawyer at some point of time, because I don't think this is simple enough for you to handle. I think you guys need to, she needs to move here at least and make a permanent home in USA. That's very important. Will my history in Tri-Valley University cause a problem? It should not, unless you were involved in fraud and indicted. Just because you were a student there should not be a problem. H-1B startup. Currently on H-1B, wants to start a company. I-140 is approved. So they'll hire 2 employees in India. See, the problem is, if you start a company in USA, you are working on American soil. Even though the work is ultimately being performed in India, you would be in violation of your H-1B status. Okay. So you should not be doing this. Unless you have an EAD, and I have a video on that as well. In fact, there's a video on who can work, whether a student can work, whether an H-1B can work, whether an H-4 can work. I have a video on that on my blog. Okay. You should not be working on the H-1B. This kind of employment on H-1B is illegal. Consultant 007. I guess we have James Bond. Okay, Mr. Bond. The way it works is, Let's see. I-485 RFE is pending for more than 60 days. Priority date is current. Hello, Rajiv. My priority date is current. I recently got RFE. Okay, not received any update. They said it's pre-adjudicated. An officer is still working on the case. Is there any other way to contact USCIS? So you've contacted a congressman. You can try contacting the ombudsman. Ombudsman. O-M-B-U-D-S-M-A-N. Ombudsman. USCIS, just Google USCIS ombudsman. I shouldn't be saying Google. Any search engine. I'm not particularly committed to Google. You can do Bing or Yahoo or whatever. Okay. So go ahead and try contacting the ombudsman's office. Maybe they can help. Seoul 71. They have a problem with the birth certificate with some errors, and it doesn't have their name. So what kind of affidavit do I need? This is a little complicated. I think you should get a lawyer. It's not a question of just submitting affidavits. You need to make an explanation of exactly why you have these discrepancies. And also, your lawyer should make the offer for DNA testing. That, look, if you have a problem, you don't believe us, I can prove my relationship through DNA testing. But get yourself a lawyer. I think it's a little bit, it can be done by an individual, but I prefer that you go through a lawyer. Ajax S108, questions regarding H-1B visa filing. First of all, let me tell you, entering USA on a B-1 and converting to an H-1 is always a bad idea. What happens is B-1 is given for a short period of time. When you convert from B-1 to H-1 and you ever go back for any visa stamping, consulate can stop you saying you misrepresented your intentions when you obtained the B-1 visa. It is obvious that you wanted to work in USA for a long term. Fraud cannot give you a visa barred forever from entering U.S. Okay? So not a good idea to enter USA on B-1 and change to H-1. Another question is, if somebody has a B-1 stamp on their passport and they go for H-1B visa stamping, does the existing visa become valid if the H-1B gets approved or stamped on the passport? Well, the answer is, it does not. Okay? I've said this before. I'll say it again. Usually, what happens is that when you apply for any visa, H-1B visa, for example, consulates are supposed to cancel all existing visas before they take the application. So when they take your passport, they should be stamping it, cancel, cancel, cancel on all other visas. They usually don't do that. If they do not do that, whether you get granted an H-1B or denied an H-1B, the B-1 is still valid. Okay. I think I've covered all your questions. May not be in the order you've listed them, but I remember your questions. So I've answered them all, I think. One more question. Is it legal to come to USA on B-1 then switch to another visa? I already told you that. F-1 visa especially, I think there's a regulation that says if you want to convert to an F-1 visa and you enter on any kind of B visa, you have to declare your intention at the airport. Okay? At that point, they'll probably turn you back. Ms. M says, hello, Rajiv. My priority date of May 1st, 2001 will become current with April Burton. I already had an interview in 2011 when then there was retrogression. Could you say how long the wait for the processing would be? You know, if you are pre-adjudicated, which you might be, or you should be, it could be within the next 3, 4, 5 months. I cannot guess to any degree of accuracy, but I can kind of give you my estimate. It should be less than 3, 4 months, I think. Last question of the day is from B. Sack, who says, I-485 is pending, and spouse and son are planning to go to India for son's education. How do they keep their I-485 alive? Can they change from AOS to consular processing? Yes, they can. If they have advanced parole, would it be okay to stay for a longer period? Yes. They can stay as long as the advanced parole lasts, and re-enter USA before the advance parole expires. That's perfectly legal. Okay? Now, let me open the floor for follow-up questions from people who have already posted here. Okay? Guys, please go ahead and press 5-star only if you have a follow-up question. No new questions. 5-star for follow-up questions. 1, 2. And once we are done with this, then I'll open the floor to new questions. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. 4. All right. One moment. Okay. I think you are calling on a voice over IP because I don't show a phone number. But you logged in quite early. You logged in like 10 minutes, 15 minutes before.
Yes, I'm actually calling from out of the country, so that's why.
Yeah, go ahead. Ask your questions, please.
Two questions. First of all, is there any way to, part of the TVU case, so is there any way to quicken the process of the application for my green card, or is there only one standard process?
There is only one standard process. Very rarely, for very exceptional circumstances, they might expedite. I don't see any of that here.
Okay. Second thing is, how long does it usually take? For example, if the priority date right now is 2010 December, mine is October 2012. So is that about another 2 years, or does it go faster than that?
It should go faster than that, not 2 years. Typically, the way you extrapolate time is you see what the waiting periods are. I don't have the visa bulletin in front of me. But you can kind of extrapolate the times from the visa bulletin. They are a rough guess. Once the priority date becomes current, add another 6 months on top of that to finish the green card process.
Okay.
Could be more, but usually it's about damage time.
Okay. And also one more thing. My wife works in Hong Kong right now. She's going to be moving to the U.S. for a while. Does she need to pay taxes for where she's been working for the last year in the U.S. also?
Sir, out of 7 billion people living on this planet, I am the last person you should ask.
okay,
I'm not ashamed
to
fail my tax exam. I am really bad at taxes.
Okay, that's all right. That's
talking numbers, my eyes glaze over. I'm not except with the numbers are attached to law. I'm okay with other immigration law-related numbers, but not good with tax. What you need to do is, most countries, not all countries, have something called double taxation relief.
Right.
So basically, if you pay taxes in one location, you don't have to pay again. But you need to talk to
right.
a CPA who
okay.
knows the laws of Hong Kong as well as U.S.
Okay, sounds good.
Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Another one, voice over IP or maybe an international call. You logged in 12:26, about 4 minutes before before the call started. Hello?
Rajiv?
Yes, sir.
This is R. Katta.
R. Katta, okay.
Thank you for your conference call. It actually helped me previously. I had this question.
Excellent.
And this is very unusual that I got H-1B approved with I-94.
Right, right.
It's really cool.
Right, and that's good. I mean, I don't look a gift horse in the mouth. They
yeah.
knew the facts, and they still gave you the I-94. Good for you. Why not?
Yeah, they asked about the status, and we provide we are in currently status, so they agreed, and they approved the extension.
Because what happened was the guy who was looking over your paperwork, to your good fortune, was not well-trained. A well-trained adjudicator would have said, no, when you have a case pending,
mm-hmm.
you are not in status. You are merely in authorized period of status. But that's okay. Let's not debate our good fortune. Let's go on from there.
Okay. So if we withdraw the old one, in future, when the 485 is filed, and if we get the same RFE saying it should not be provided the stay, but he has provided stay, so what is the, like, withdraw means like you are, like, walking away. So it was never an intention.
I don't think I've already answered this question, actually. I don't think it's going to be a problem. There are several ways of handling a minor issue like this.
Oh. Okay,
there
so
is
the question on the status, it's really a minor and we can answer. That's what I want to know, right?
I believe it's a minor issue. I believe it can be handled many different ways. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, so that's all I need, Rajiv. Thanks for your help
if
again.
If it becomes a problem, or even if it has the hint of becoming a problem, your lawyer should be able to handle it. Not withdrawing the case is not going to help you unless you win the case. Of course, if you respond and you win the case, you are 100% safe. Okay?
Yep.
But if the employer doesn't want to respond, it looks like they have some problem. And if I was their lawyer, I would have told them, you must respond. Not responding to an RFE creates a red flag against the employer.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you responded and won, you would be doing great. But if, whether you get denied or whether you withdraw, it's the same situation.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Rajiv.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Area code 718. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is BSAC. The last question, number 23.
Oh, yeah, good. Thank you. Give me the question number. That's easier for me to find.
Yeah, it was I-485 pending and spouse in India moving to India.
Spouse and son moving to India. Go ahead.
Yes. So how to, you know, since the 485 has been filed, how do we change it to a consular process? Is there any form that need to be filed?
If you want to convert a pending I-485 to consular processing, you file form I-824 with the government.
Uh-huh. Okay. Should that be filed before they leave, or it can be filed at any point?
It doesn't matter. It takes them 7, 8, 9 months to act on it. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Okay. That should be fine.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Welcome. Good luck. Okay. Area code 404. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I got a quick, but the I-601, what is the status as far as that?
Yeah, stop right there. I'm only answering follow-up questions right now. Let me get back with you.
Okay.
Right? Just stop. Okay, area code 515. 515?
Yes, this is Jiraz. Question number 11.
11, okay.
So, follow-up question I have is, what happens if...
Let me get to it. H1, 6th year. Oh, F1. Okay, yeah, I remember. Go ahead, please.
So, what happens if I-140 is filed... can I still apply for a student visa then, or?
You know, it's an interesting situation. Technically, if you apply for a student visa after your I-140 has been filed, or student status, they can deny the student status based upon that reason only. But I know many cases that have been approved. Okay.
Okay.
So I don't know whether the government stance is a little soft on this issue, whatever the reason, but theoretically at least, or going by the book, it'll be much more difficult to get an F-1 if your I-140 is pending.
Would I have to provide some additional documentation when I file student F1 after I-140?
That is the problem. What is the issue here? The issue is you have to demonstrate non-immigrant intention.
Okay.
What documents can you really provide for it? I have property in India, property can be sold. I have money in India, money can be transferred. I have mom and dad in India, they can be brought over once you have your citizenship. So really, there is no way to demonstrate. There's no documentation I can suggest.
But isn't giving up my I-140, which is existing green card process itself, an indication that I'm ready to...
You know, that can go both ways.
Okay.
I would say that's a very good indication that you don't want to process the green card. But USCIS could take the position, the fact that you filed it shows that you have an immigrant intention somewhere along the line. I mean, it's not something you can make definitive that this is good enough. If I withdraw my I-140, my immigrant intention is gone. No.
Okay, and just one last thing on this. While F1 process is going on, can I still continue on my H1, I-140, or whatever process is going on my perm front?
Yes.
GC front?
If you have an F-1 pending, until the F-1 is actually approved, the change of status is actually approved, you can continue on your H-1, no problem.
And if it gets rejected, I can still continue?
If it gets rejected, you can still continue, no problem.
Awesome. Thanks, Rajiv. I really appreciate you answering all the
questions. My pleasure, and the very best of luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
Last follow-up question is from area code 734. Go ahead, please. Area code 734. It could be you logged in at 12:34 Eastern Time. Okay, well, all right. Any question at all, guys, press 5-star. Any question at all. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, in the order that you logged in. Oh, there's a repeat question that I'll have to, that will have to wait till the end. 86, let's see. 860, go ahead, please.
Hi, Raju. This is Han. Currently, I'm in H-1B, I'm sixth year H-1B. My labor was filed, approved, and got 1 year H-1B extension with my labor certificate. And now I have a valid H-1B for next 20 months. Okay. And in between, my I-140 filed, and it was approved yesterday. So now I have a new offer in my hand, so which is more attractive career-wise. Can I change my job now through AC-21, or should I wait for 6 months for AC-21 eligibility, or what's my option now?
Is your 485 filed?
My 485 is not filed. It's just I-140 is approved.
AC-21 is out of the question because AC-21 requires I-140 approved and I-485 pending for 180 days. With me so far?
Yeah.
Okay. So AC-21 is out. The question is, if I want to change jobs over to a new employer, what are my best options? Well, here's what you should do.
Yeah.
You should go ahead and apply for a three-year H-1 with the new company on premium processing basis.
Right.
Okay? But don't join that company until you actually get the H-1 approval.
Okay.
Once you get the H-1 approval, you can join the company. You can give the old company 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks notice, whatever you have. Just because the other case is approved doesn't mean the existing case is invalid. You can continue working with the old company indefinitely if you want.
I don't need to wait for 6 months. Right? So now in this case,
you don't need to wait for 6 months. You can do this right away. And when you move over, immediately start a new green card through the new employer. And the way it would work is the priority date of the old case will get transferred to the new case, even if the old employer revokes the I-140.
Right.
Okay?
Okay. And another question is,
can you speak a little bit? I can barely hear you.
Sorry. Can my employer do 2 40-hour billing to different clients, two different clients? Because I work as a database administrator, so work remotely. So can my employer is allowed to do that while I'm on H-1B?
Your question is, are H-1B holders allowed to work remotely?
Yeah.
The answer is yes, of course, but then the H-1 has to be prepared and filed accordingly.
Okay. And can we work for two different clients and bill for 40 hours on each client, for each client?
I have many DBAs who do that. One of our DBAs here in Washington, D.C., gets paid for 3 full-time jobs.
Okay. So, okay, that's not really a problem on H-1B.
No. Government knows it. At least they should know it. There are plenty of DBAs who do that.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
In fact, I'm thinking of quitting law and going into DBA business myself.
Welcome to the DBA world. Thanks.
Good luck.
Thank you, Raj. Bye.
Sure. Okay, next call is area code 404. I'm going in the order people logged in, okay? Area code 404.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I got a question about the two questions about the six, the I-601.
Okay.
As far as the, you know, what is the process of that? What that does that mean when you get, when you file for that?
Okay. Is it based upon unlawful presence and the waiver based upon marriage to a U.S. citizen, et cetera?
Yeah, it's exactly, yes.
Okay. Let me explain to you what has happened. It'll take a couple of minutes to explain because it's kind of a complicated thing. The way it works is, if somebody has been unlawfully present in USA for over 180 days and then over 1 year, they become subject to 3-year bar or 10-year bar. But the funny thing is, the bar doesn't attach to them until they leave USA.
Okay.
Sometimes what happens is, now, let's say if somebody entered USA legally and they got married to a U.S. citizen after being unlawfully present for 10 years, no problem. As long as they didn't leave the country and they entered legally, they can apply for a green card without an I-601.
Okay. Okay.
But if either they entered USA illegally, in which case they can't get their green card within USA, in which case if they leave, they are subject to 10-year bar, in those cases, we have to file an I-601. What used to happen was, the only way to file I-601 was from outside USA. Government has changed that. They said, you know, we want a little bit more consistency and less separation between families. Let us let them file I-601 while they are still in USA. Let them wait out and see how their I-601 works out. If they get a waiver, then they can proceed to get their green card from outside USA. It doesn't take long then.
Okay.
That's okay. The way it is.
Okay. Yeah, because I applied for it, and it's called, been past the time.
Yeah, it's called stateside I-601 processing, which means within U.S.
Okay.
Stateside I-601 processing. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Next one is area code 408. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Daju. This is Kranti. Actually, I have my one. It's regarding my I-140 and H-1 transfer. So I have 140 with my previous employer. I got my 140 around July of 2009, and my priority date is October of 2008 with Company A. And I moved to Company B in the year 2010, September, as a full-time. But for some reasons, they are not able to file my green card. They did not start for so many reasons. And now my Company A, who holds my I-140, came back and started saying that he's going to revoke my I-140. So, and he says that it's, even if he revokes that I-140, I'll be eligible to put the priority date once my new employer files my green card. So how far is that true?
That is true.
Oh, even my I-140 is revoked, still my new employer can get the old priority date?
That is correct.
Oh, that actually, it was strange to me when he said that.
USCIS has flip-flopped on this issue. They went one way, then they went another way. But the most recent thinking is the only time you cannot carry your priority date is if USCIS revokes the I-140 for fraud or misrepresentation.
Okay. Okay, so the answer is yes. And the other question I had is if the priority becomes current, let's say the October 2008 in EB2 becomes current now, can I apply the EAD on behalf of my Company A and still work for Company B and wait for EAD to come in and then go to Company A? Will that be possible?
Well,
if
I was going to say no, but I have changed my mind. You can do that as long as there is an honest, good faith intention to work for Company A.
Yeah, I want to move to company A once my EAD is up, like once I get my EAD. So that was my intention. Because I cannot work to company A. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You have good faith intention to do so, and they have the good faith intention to hire you back, it's okay. But bear in mind one thing. The time that you have not been working for them, they must have continued ability to pay wages. Their tax returns must have enough money to show that they have your salary. If not, you could be in a lot of trouble. So then it's better not to go back.
Oh, okay. Because it's a small company. And
have their lawyers review it for ability to pay wages issue. Otherwise, there could be a hole in which they could not fill out the money that they need to pay you. It would be a big problem. They'll revoke the I-140. It'll be a disaster.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay. So is there any way I can... I did not find any way apart from filing an EAD and then working, because is there any way apart from filing the EAD but go back to company and A, working for them?
I think you need to file a new green card and at the same time have your lawyers review and see if there's ability to pay wages issue for that time you need. Okay?
Okay, and the last, I'm sorry, I'll make it quick. If I go back to my previous company, do they need to start my green card again, or they can just start, continue with my 140?
If they don't have the ability to pay wages issue problem, no issue at all, they can continue the same green card.
Okay, okay, that sounds good. Thank you so much.
I want to warn you, USCIS has been getting very, very tough in the last few years. So they could raise this issue. Just as a lawyer, I'm kind of trying to act as a crystal gazer and give you the future like an astrologer. They could raise this issue. Why did you leave this company if you had a permanent job with it? Okay. Be prepared to answer those questions if you go back to that old employer. They may not ever raise these issues, but, you know, these are things that you need to keep in mind. All right?
Okay. So the first question I asked was, if my 140 is revoked, you by the company, there is no good reason that my current employer cannot get the old priority date, right? They can do it. It's a safe method, just like what they do in normal I-140 processing,
sir,
right?
You asked me the same question 3 times, and the answer is still the same.
Okay, sorry. Thanks for your time and thanks for your patience. Yeah.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you, Raju. Thanks.
Bye-bye. I have 3 more questions. 2 are old repeat questions. 1 is the new one. So let me do the new one, and then we'll do the 2 repeat questions. 4 to 5, area code 4 to 5.
Hi, Raju. I am Karthik, and I am completing my 6 years of H-1B currently in next 1 month, and I have got I-140 approved by current employer, but I foresee that there might be some issue going on maybe next couple of months before I get my H-1B extension. So I want to know if I want to switch over job with just I-140 approved with current employer, but with the future employer, what would be the basis on which I can transfer?
I've answered this question in various ways, and I'll put it together for you for your situation. What you should do is, you should get a new employer to start your H-1 premium processing. Based upon the I-140, you should be able to get 3-year H-1, right?
Yes.
Don't join the new employer until the H-1 is actually approved. Once the H-1 is approved, you join, and then you can also port the priority date to a new green card that the new employer will start.
Okay, but is it just I-140? Approved I-140 is enough for the new employer?
More than enough.
So they don't require any H-1?
No. They will need to do an H-1. They will file an H-1 based upon the approved I-140 for 3 years. That's what I said.
Since the new employer will have an I-140 approved by current employer, is it possible for them?
Listen to me. I think you're
okay.
Confused. Let me make clear a few things for you. First of all, the new employer will have to get you an H-1 so that you can work with them. Clear?
Okay.
They can get an H-1 approved for you on the basis of an I-140 approved through another employer. No problem.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay, I have another follow-up question.
Okay,
in that case...
Let me finish.
I'm sorry.
Let me finish. Okay. What I'm suggesting is, let them file H-1 premium processing. You join them once the H-1 is approved. It should be for 3 years. And then you start your green card through them. That's what I'm suggesting. Are you clear so far?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Raju.
Now go ahead with your question.
Yeah, another question is, if I move to the new employer, so you said that they have to start all I-140 and everything.
All the way from firm, all over again.
All over again. Okay, but should the job description be the same, what I currently have?
It does not have to be the same. No.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Raju.
You're welcome. Good luck. By the way, guys, I have two more questions left. I'll deal with them in just 2 seconds. I wanted to show you guys something. We have a new app. And if you go to forums, here's the link right here on top. And you click here, it will bring you to the app. I think this is a good app. The part that I like the best, it's free, first of all. It's for iPad and iPhone right now. We will be working soon on the Android and the Windows version. So if you look at the screens, you've got the videos, you've got the visa bulletin, and not only the most recent one, but the history of the entire visa bulletin. Then you have the news page. But the best part I like is the audios. What happens is I can dictate an audio, and it will pop up on your app showing that there's a new audio. It really is a good feature. That's really what I like the best about this app. Okay. So I would highly encourage you guys to download this app. It's free, like I said. We intend to keep it free for a lifetime. Share it with friends and family because we're not advertising it except through word of mouth. Okay. So now going back to the last two questions. After that, I won't have time, so I'm just going to answer these last two sets of questions. Hong Kong, go ahead, please.
Hi, I had one last question. Sorry for coming back in. My case for the Tri-Valley, my F-1 was canceled, and then I reapplied for another F-1, which was not approved. But like you mentioned in this audio once, my prior tourist visa was still available because they had not canceled it as they were supposed to. And so I went on that, and at the port of entry, I was sort of suggested to withdraw my entry.
So you withdrew, but they did not formally exclude you. So there's
no
negative inference from that, no problem.
Okay, because, they kept me there for the night, and basically they suggested I withdraw, and I withdrew and came back the next night.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
That's
as
fine,
long
right?
as
okay, so I default.
Excluded. As long as you are allowed to withdraw your application for admission, you're fine.
Okay, there would be no negative effect on my green card application, right?
None whatsoever.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Oh, guys, somebody else has raised their hand as well. Okay, now this is the very, very last two. I have to really go. Okay? Area code 920, go ahead, please.
Hello, it's Hillary H. D'Souza. Following question on my start date on the approval date.
What is the question number?
11, I think. 11.
Go ahead, Mr. D'Souza.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah. Is it a standard practice that USCIS gives the start date as of the approval date or something?
Yes. That's why I said I'm surprised that your lawyers even had to call USCIS because this is standard practice.
Standard practice. So if I go for your visa stamping in India or if I go on port of entry, so I shouldn't have any problem, right?
No, not for this reason.
Not for this reason. Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Perfectly okay. Don't worry.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
All right, guys. Last question. Area code 734.
Yes. Kanaji, this is regarding question 17 for the H-1B startup. I'm sorry, I was on mute before and I couldn't speak.
Yeah, because I tried to So I tried to call. I mean, I opened up the call for you, and I kept it open.
Yes.
So, yes, you were thinking of starting your own company on H-1B. Go ahead, please.
Yes. So first of all, thank you very much for all your time, you know, to go through and answer my question. The follow-up question I had was, so I cannot start a company even if I'm not performing any active work. I mean, I don't anticipating working for this company or drawing any salary.
I want you to listen to the video that I have or watch the video that I have on employment, okay?
Okay.
And you work on your visa, the kind of visa. I have a bunch of videos on this. Watch them. It'll give you a
okay.
very good idea. You can be a passive investor as long
mm-hmm.
as you're not working. Don't even lift a finger towards helping the company. You can be
oh.
a passive investor, but you cannot work on U.S. soil. Can you own an Indian company? Sure. As long as the company does all the work in India and you're not doing any work for the company from here, it's fine.
Okay. Okay.
You cannot work on U.S. soil.
Oh, okay. And how can I search these videos on your site?
Let me see. You can just go to my blog. There are two places the videos are.
Okay.
They are under audio, video, media. Let me see. I go to immigration.com and podcasts and videos right on top. It's right there.
Okay.
That's one way you can do it. And the second way is you go to immigration.com and right on the top there is an entry for my blog.
Okay.
Just to type. Click on blog and you can look at all the videos.
Okay, and I should search for employment. What should I search for there?
Videos right now, you should be able to find it fairly quickly. Couple of
videos. Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome. Good luck, everybody. Thank you for being here, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.